I've covered most of the things that you can get an idea.
Okay, so Mackenzie, do you have something you need to add about your communication with Dr. McWhorter?
Yes. So that's right. He called my mom first, and she did basically say, hey, you need to call my daughter. She's Fiona. I want her to hear what the plan is. So Dr. McWhorter calls me. I answer, and basically, you know, he goes, Winnie's going to be fine. Like, you know, you have nothing to worry about. She's totally okay. And I was like, oh my goodness, she doesn't need surgery? And he's like, no, she doesn't need surgery. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Like, I'm really happy about that, because that's what we were worried about. You know, no one wants to go and have to have their dog have surgery. It's not exactly like the best case scenario kind of thing. So I was like, oh, thank goodness she's not as sick as I thought she was. And basically, he had just said, you know, I know you have Serenia at home. Give her that. It should help. Give her Pepcid. That'll help with, you know, some GI issues, help lower her acid levels so she won't feel as sick, and wait for her to pass her poop. And she shouldn't want to eat for the next 24 to 48 hours, basically, is what he said to us. So I was like, okay, so don't be concerned in that amount of time, and wait. And they're trying to say, earlier they were going, oh, she was vomiting uncontrollably this whole time, and that's why they took her into the emergency vet on Sunday. She threw up once through the Serenia, which was his recommendation to take her, and that's when we took her. She wasn't uncontrollably vomiting through the Serenia, and we were just waiting and being like, oh, let's see where this goes. She threw up a single time on the Serenia that night, and we took her to the emergency vet that Sunday. We were like, okay, she needs to go, and this is concerning. And so that's what we did. We took her to the emergency vet. The first place we went to was Arise. In the nicest way possible, they just weren't very accommodating. I didn't feel like they read her previous chart. They were not very thorough in it. So we were not very trusting with them, because it really seemed to me, especially because of what Dr. McWhorter had said previously, that they seem to be adding a lot of different things on. And they also didn't explain to us the difference between a board-certified surgeon and a regular veterinarian, which is also why we were a little confused, because we were like, well, I'm obviously, I'm versed in people, not in animals. I don't know veterinary stuff very well. I was not aware that there's a difference between them. I just assumed, I was like, why does it matter? Vets can do surgery. Why would I pay, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 more for this if I could go somewhere else and do the exact same thing for my dog, which she needs? And so we had called multiple places. The place in Scottsdale was like, yes, we can do it. And we were like, okay, let's go there. So we get her, we go straight to that vet immediately. There is no like waiting and putzing around. We go straight to there, they assess her, they go, you know, this is more serious than we thought it was. And they explained to us the difference between a board-certified surgeon and a vet. She goes, you know, I think I could do this. She's like, but it is very complicated, and I do not have the resources in case she flatlines on the table or she needs, you know, extra help. She's like, I think you should go to a board-certified surgeon. And so that's what we did. We went to the third place, went there, and they told us, you know, yes, she needs surgery. And at that point, too, no one had said that that there was a possibility of her dying. You know, they had said that it was serious. No one had told me there was any perforations. I didn't know that. I especially didn't know it was in her duodenum. And at that time, you know, they said that to me, and I go, is she going to be okay? Like, unfortunately, during that time, I'd gone through my GI portion in PA school, so all I knew of was basically what we did in anatomy, not clinical cases. So I was unsure of like repair procedures or anything like that. But as soon as they said that, I was like, well, I know exactly like where the biliary system enters into the duodenum. I'm like, that's basically inoperable. And they had said, you know, she might have a perforation in her peripheral duodenum. And And they go, you know, she, it might be inoperable and you might have to euthanize her. And I wasn't prepared to hear that. And that was already, they said that after we had signed to have her go into surgery. So it wasn't like they told us this and then we're like, oh, she needs surgery. It was, we're going to get her surgery now. And then after they like took her back, they were like, hey, and by the way, the other places had said that they found this on her ultrasound and that we're worried about that. And so, you know. We said that as I was holding her, not realizing that that would be the last time I saw her alive. And what's funny is the surgeon who did her, or who aided in her surgery, we had actually saw him that Monday. Because she had some issues with her joints healing properly, and she was a little wonky in her wrists. And they had basically tried to recommend, hey, she might need surgery to stabilize her arms. And we had talked to him about that. I had an appointment at my school because they also do veterinary care at Midwestern, and they offer a discount for CTs and other things for your animal there. And she was supposed to get a CT scan of her arms so that we could properly diagnose her so she could get surgery so she could walk better. And she was dead the next week. And, you know, he walks in, he goes, yeah, I remember you. He's like, so sorry about your dog.
I'm really sorry. We just want to make sure we keep it to...
Can I just add a couple
here.
More things just while I had a second?
Is it any new information?
It is new information.
Okay.
So I don't know how relevant to me, but after the last hearing, we looked up Dr. McWhorter, and it appeared that this is not his first offense. He was found grossly negligent by you guys before when he came to for something that sounded oddly familiar to our case. And not only that, when you guys recommended his training, he did not complete the training in a timely time. And I guess I just take a look at who your character is and what you do.
Yeah, so that's...
Okay, and that's fine, but it enters into my feeling on stuff and the fact that this...
And we appreciate your testimony. I do want to ask the board, if you have any questions for either of the complainants.
So sorry you had to go through. I had some questions, but I believe you answered them regarding these conversations, so I won't repeat those again. One question about after you took Winnie home. You mentioned that vomited one time, and that was right before you took him in to the first emergency. What else was going on? Eating anything painful? What else was going on those few days?
She actually kind of ate a little more. She still wasn't, I mean, she wasn't eating her regular kibble. She wasn't super interested in it. She ate a tiny bit, nothing super great.
She would eat some treats.
Yeah, she would eat treats, but, you know, she wasn't just... Not like she usually was. And, you know, I had to give her the Pepcid and the Serenio, so she wasn't really super fond to be around me because I had to go and shove that down her throat, and she wasn't exactly joyful about that. And so we were just waiting around because, again, he also said, you know, 24 to 48 hours, you know, she'll be not really very hungry. And we're like, okay. And we were waiting for the poop too. And obviously she had pooped that, I believe, Saturday. And we were like, oh, thank goodness. And then she just, you know, we were still giving her everything. And then she just, like, I gave her Serenia, I want to say maybe a few hours before, and she grew up, and we were like, we need to take her in.
And that was from when? Did she vomit till you?
She vomited Sunday morning. And we go, okay, we need to go now.
And that was the, Sunday was the day all
Sunday was the day that she died.
Oh, she vomited. Sunday morning, you took her in. And then it all took place.
Yes.
During that.
Yeah, everything happened during Sunday. We went to three different vets that Sunday. And I'm sorry, I only mentioned the thing prior just to show that, you know, we're not, I cared about her deeply. I wanted to get her other surgeries to improve her life, not to save her life. So that was just added to show that
and if we
she was important to me.
If they had, if he had said that we needed to get x-rays in 2 hours or whatever that short timeline was, we would have immediately gone and done this. And it wasn't done because it was never even presented as something that ever needed to happen.
And this was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes, I have the phone calls on my phone.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do any board members have any other questions for the complainants? Okay, so you can go ahead and step back.
Thank you. Thank you,
really appreciate your time. Thank you.
And then Dr. McWhorter and counsel, do you have anything, any additional remarks?
Yes, Chair, just a few. I would note there was a procedural issue that the complainant raised about all of a sudden we have new information. That's because we have new information. Your board is on the old system where you don't disclose until you hit investigative or the informal. And so we would not have the benefit of some of the materials that I'm assuming Tracy gathered through her investigation, including written statements by the other clinicians. So that's in part why we can have provided a fulsome response, because we've now had a peek behind the curtain as to what other practitioners have said. And what other practitioners have said, they've all charted continuous vomiting. And we and also charted that the recommendation by Dr. McWhorter in part was if the antiemetic still causes vomiting, you got to get the dog in right away. There's no support for the idea that it was a single vomiting event. In the charting, Dr. McWhorter was silent through this case. After his care concluded, he did not have contact with these other providers. And so I don't understand how these other providers could have plucked out of the ether this idea of continuous vomiting or any further vomiting on an antiemetic requires care. That had to have been provided. And we know from the timeline, 3 days passed from the care of Dr. McWhorter till they went back. So if we had continuous vomiting on an antiemetic, that was, they even acknowledged in the charting that they needed to bring the dog back. Also, the only other thing I would, the other thing I would mention is inconsistently with their account, they actually, in the text messages, they indicated not that they had concerns about the ability of the clinician who had initially proposed doing the care, the surgery in Queen Creek. They wrote, she needs surgery. The place in QC we took her to wanted 11K to do the surgery. We called around and found a place that'll be cheaper. That's all it says. It doesn't say anything about the quality of that clinician. And then finally, again, I think that Dr. McWhorter has provided you a very detailed account of the different options that he presented these people with. I think you should pay attention to the fact that apparently not only Dr. McWhorter didn't meet the standard of care according to them, but no one told them that it was serious. No one told them that taking the animal in, that they could possibly suffer, that the animal could possibly pass away. I think that I certainly don't want to diminish anyone's experience when they're going through having an animal in crisis. But I think that it does strain somewhat belief that this many people told them this many incorrect things, and they flagged for every clinician they talked to something that was done incorrectly or information they apparently were not given. Finally, while I believe Dr. McWhorter has hopefully convinced you that he did provide them the surgery or no surgery options, standard of care still allows different possible ways to treat this issue. And we do have literature that more conservative can be trialed in this situation, provided it's followed up with immediate return if there's an antiemetic that fails, and also with the radiology of every 4 to 8 hours. which is clearly in all the reports. So I do think that there's reasonable evidence that it was conveyed to them. So again, my role here is to help talk about the evidence and the information. It's not done because I like the fact that any animal passes away, but the reality is Dr. McWhorter here gave the necessary information, and unfortunately this animal still did pass away, but I don't think it rises to anything that's been presented rises to a level of gross negligence or wanton or willful misconduct.
Thank you. Dr. McWhorter, did you have anything?
No.
Did any board members have any additional questions? No? Okay. This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. So we'll maybe we'll step back.
Sure. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Nosley. Sure.
Okay. This case, of course, revolves around these conversations. And as we heard and as we read through all the materials presented to us, the recollections of the respondent and the complainant are significantly different between what they stated. And I have examples of it. I don't think we really need to go through it. It all boils down to basically, we have a respondent that's maintaining that surgery was recommended on three occasions, and the complainant elected instead to proceed with a conservative approach. And the complainants maintain that they were the ones who inquired about surgery and were told that they should follow a medical management and observation. So this is what we have. And when we see these differences, these stark differences, especially concerning something as significant as surgery, non-surgery, we turn to the medical record. Well, what does the record say? And in this case, there was absolutely no client communications in the record whatsoever. No against medical advice, no declined surgery. There's nothing of that in the record that would support what the respondent has told us. The critical fact in this case is that radiology report. The radiology report has, the radiologists had definite concern for what was happening in the pylorus and the duodenum, and therefore made a recommendation for repeat radiographs in a few hours, 4 to 8 hours, he specifically said. The respondent was also, according to his notes, concerned about a blockage in this area. In the investigative committee, I did disagree with one thing. It was said, well, these reports are just standard. They just give standard language. I didn't see that at all in the report. I believe that report was made specifically about what the radiologist found in Winnie. It was very specific to the case. So in my experience with this type of foreign body, and they are very, very difficult from the standpoint of diagnosis and also treatment. In my practice, I have had this very scenario or very similar scenario where a foreign body lodges in the pylorus, in the pyloric portion of the stomach, and then goes through the pylorus and then collects in the duodenum. And I did endoscopy in my practice. That would be my first go-to. I would want to see what was going on. I've retrieved socks that were stuck in that area, these scrubby things you clean dishes with, stranded out, and half in the stomach and half in the pylorus. It's not like an obstruction further down where there is ileus and distended bowel. It makes it much easier to recognize an obstruction that is more distal in the duodenum, it's very, very difficult. And so you need to figure out if that's happening. Scope, surgery, because what happens over time when it's stuck in this area, the body continues to try and try and try to move this material. And if the material is abrasive, a rough surface, perforation's a real possibility. So we knew what the material was, we knew it could have sharp edges, and we knew it was wadded up in the duodenum. That early intervention in that case is what you need, whether it's scoping surgery, re-radiographing and hoping that, oh gosh, it's moving, that's great. None of that was done. And I have, lastly, it seems to me that if a complainant in a case like this received the recommendation of surgery several times, three times at least, and then declined to have that surgery performed, costs were never discussed, estimates were never discussed, but they just immediately said, no, we're not doing surgery. Then, and things went bad because they didn't, then why would they bring a complaint against the doctor who made those recommendations? After the patient then failed to respond to the medical management. And surgery was ultimately done. It was too late. Intervention in this case may not have been successful, but its best chance for success was on the first day. So I agree there's violation in this case of our practice standard. I was contemplating gross negligence versus failure to follow acceptable procedures, and this is a case where we had a delay in the proper treatment, and the animal suffered and ultimately died. So I think gross negligence is the proper violation in this case. I would probably change it a little bit from what the investigative committee, and I would break it into two violations. And so I would make a motion to find a violation in this case of ARS 32-22-3211, gross negligence, failure to recommend surgery given the facts at the time which resulted in harm to the patient, and failure to provide adequate instructions to ensure proper follow-up care, also resulting in harm to the patient. And then I would make a second motion regarding the records, but because I don't believe they should be in gross negligence.
Well, before you start making motions, we should discuss this.
Well, I'm making the motion, then so now it's open for discussion.
Yeah.
Second.
Oh, with a second, I guess.
There's a motion and a second.
So my only concern, well, not my only concern, but my concern with the delaying of surgery is, like I said, it's not an uncommon thing to do medical management in these kids. We can have the issue with the 4 to 8 hours, which would put us probably after closing at 1 o'clock. So I mean, that can be a little bit difficult, getting an animal back and dealing with all that same day. Again, was there communication about that? No, there's no communication in here, which is a medical records at a minimum issue. But I'm having a hard time with gross negligence, especially seeing the declination of the second recommendation for surgery. That's the kicker for me, is we have in there the guarded to grave prognosis and the recommendation for surgery immediately, and that was still declined. So I have a little problem with full gross negligence here. I mean, it's definitely medical records, maybe failure to offer acceptable procedures.
Yes.
Drawing one right now. But gross negligence just seems a little too high for me at this point.
Okay. I appreciate what you're saying about then what happened with the other emergencies of follow-up. And I looked at that and thought about that in detail and wanted to hear the story. And I think there are explanations for why. First of all, it was all done in that day. It wasn't we're going back home because we're not going to do surgery.
Yeah.
Okay. It was done that day.
Yeah. That's it was bouncing around, delaying
stuff. But yeah, we're delaying now a few hours after we've delayed several days.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's number one. And I heard an explanation of more, we're wanting to do what's best for Winnie, and I'm not sure I'm hearing what's best for Winnie, and I want, it's very common for owners to go, can I talk to my regular vet? I really would like to talk to my regular vet and see what they think. That's who they know. And so, and that was done. And ultimately, everybody went, no, surgery, go, go, go. So I don't take that as a declining surgery, as if, nope, we're still gonna wait.
But again, we had the testimony that said there was consideration for not feeling comfortable, but the text messages submitted by the complainant only talked about money. So again, there's a lot of conflicting information, and that's where gross negligence is just a little extreme for me, because there is too much confliction. And
the financial piece is tough because what do people that aren't in veterinary medicine have to discuss other than the financial piece? And so if you see that a surgery is $11,000 and somebody else tells you the same surgery, right, with the information they have, is $5,000, and I don't want to compare pets to cars, but if you were given that for your vehicle, you'd go to the $5,000 place, because what's the difference? You're getting it taken care of. So of course you're going to see communications that talk about the dollar amounts.
Yeah, for sure.
But
I'm just saying that's a consideration, but it was all consideration on testimony based on I wasn't fully comfortable with the information given to me, and where that didn't get supported by the evidence that was provided.
We had no opportunity to discuss costs with the respondent. There were no costs discussed.
For sure. No, for sure.
So it's hard to say, all about cost, because...
I'm not saying it's all about cost, but it goes back to the multiple recommendations made by the radiologist of medical management is not wrong here. And then if we're not getting better, then what does it say? Said in the meantime, medical management for gastroenterocolitis may be beneficial if the patient's clinical signs worsen or fail to improve despite medical management. Abdominal ultrasonography or barium upper GI study could be used to further evaluate the GI tract and remainder of the abdomen.
My response to that is that's after the radiologist has satisfied that repeat radiology was done and we've passed this. Now medical management, as you outlined, is in order.
Yeah.
But the primary concern is this a case that should have medical management? I want to know whether it should have been a surgery case first, and then we'll talk about medical management, which is the order that the report was in.
I think in hindsight, you could say, okay, it'd be a surgical case first because of course of what happened, the outcome. But I think in the moment, most of us are probably going to be more conservative as opposed to, oh, that stomach's moderately dilated, let's go in and open it up and see what's going on. Most, just like you said, if it's in the intestines, it's easy. If it's in the stomach, it could just be gas. And even the radiologist said this could be an ileus resulting in gas in the stomach. So I mean, so there's a lot of ifs, a lot of questions, and this is where the art of practice comes in. But in the art of practice, if you choose the wrong method of treatment, is that truly negligence? Is that truly a malpractice case? Or is that this is just how things happen sometimes? So again, I still think there's problems here. And I still think, like I said, I would be more comfortable with the acceptable procedures, but negligence is just, it's just a little far for me.
Okay. I have something to add. To me, it seems like on the initial day when the presentation, and if you were gonna manage it medically, and you made that choice where you waited for things to develop and waited to get your second set of radiograph films and whatnot, why would you decrease the intensity of your medical management by sending the animal home instead of keeping it under observation, under IV fluids, so that if it became surgical, you had prepped it cardiovascularly to be a better surgical candidate? So I think that's where the problem was, is that, and maybe it was because it was a Saturday, and if it had happened on a weekday, that if it had been hospitalized, IV fluids, re-x-rayed, you might have come to that decision on Saturday versus Sunday.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then you were that much further behind.
We didn't get the option.
Power curve, because
just like you're saying, I would go to the emergency clinic and let's put this under, we're gonna go medical management, but we're gonna watch this guy real close. And they could have sent it to emergency right then, that day. I think that's what you're saying.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
It was a Thursday.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the,
oh.
Yeah, it was a Sunday.
Yeah,
it was a
Thursday. That's right. That's right. It was a full day. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Thursday. And we had time. This radiograph was taken around 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, but was it 1:30 was the conversation?
Yeah, so why not come in and get another radiograph?
Depends on closing time and all that. I mean, 8 hours is going to be 9:30.
Well, it's at 4 to 8.
Yeah, so a little bit earlier.
So why not come back?
I'm just saying, like I said, there's a lot of things there. We potentially called the next day and never got a response. Again, it's not on the record, but that's a medical records issue. So like I said, there's just a lot of conflicting information, which is just really hard for me to reach for negligence.
Okay.
Okay.
But so that's the motion.
Yep. I have a motion and a second. So we'll do roll call.
Can you restate the motion again?
Sure.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, sure. ARS 3222-3211, gross negligence. Failure to recommend surgery given the facts at the time, which resulted in harm to the patient, and also a failure to provide adequate instructions to ensure proper follow-up care, also resulting in harm to the patient.
All right. Dr. Burnham would be an aye. Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Nay.
Okay, the ayes have it. The motion passes.
And then I would also make a motion, violation of ARS 3222-3221, failure to maintain adequate records of services provided by not documenting critical information regarding client conversations.
Because I think you already addressed medical records in the last one, though.
No, I separated it out.
Oh, I thought you took it out. Oh, you didn't say the... Oh.
I didn't follow the IC. I separated it out because I didn't feel it appropriate to have a medical records violation under our gross negligence.
So what was the full... Because I heard records in the last one. So what was the full one that was just voted on? What was the... Motion?
That was the gross negligence for failure to recommend surgery and provide adequate follow-up instructions. That's what we just voted
on. Oh, so that's not medical records in your opinion?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. The instructions provided to the client. Yeah, that's what that referred to. But this refers to not documenting in the medical records.
Phone calls and stuff.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
So there's motion.
Oh, that's the motion. Yeah.
Yep.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Go ahead and do roll call, please.
Dr. Burns, an aye. Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. We're good with? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so the board has voted to find a violation. At next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed finding of facts and conclusions of law, and after doing so, we'll then discuss and adopt disciplinary action. If you have any questions, please call the board's executive director, Victoria Whitmore, at the board office. This concludes the formal interview. Thank you.